And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine. It's another Thursday. This one's the 12th of September, 2024. How are you all keeping out there? I hope you're very well indeed, whether you're listening to us across our beautiful northwest of Ireland or wherever you happen to be. We love having you on board and we love you getting involved in the conversation as well. You can WhatsApp or text us on 086 60 25,000. If you're listening outside of Ireland, you could be in the UAE, United States, Australia, London, Birmingham, wherever you are, at 00353866 25,000. If you want to email, which might suit you better, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, you hop on to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick there as well, in your front room or in your kitchen whilst you're doing your business. Or you can have us on Facebook, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries. And just in relation to the Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries Facebook page as well, a relatively new addition to that is the posting of our obituary notices, because of course it's very important information that lots of people are interested in. So if you want to just get that access straight away, as soon as they're posted to that Facebook page, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, give that page a like and you won't miss out on either A, the news, the sport, or indeed if it's the obituary notices that you want to keep a track of, that'll be there for you as well. We're also on the X platform, formerly Twitter, of course, Highland Radio Ireland. Okay, it's a Thursday morning, so the papers are busy as always. I say that every Thursday, but I'm always amazed by how many papers are out in this day and age. The Draconnell Tribune this morning, as the Fianna Fáil grassroots look forward to this week's selection convention, it would seem the idea of a contest has regenerated a new enthusiasm among the delegates. The only certainty is that Minister Charlie McConnell Oak will be joined by either Councillor Micheál Nochtain or Pat the Cope Gallagher. This is the age-old strategy that keeps candidates well apart to try and maximise their voting base. It should also be okay for Micheál Martin to visit the constituency without confrontation on the national media. Delegates are arriving for the convention. Well, I presume that's a reference to Niall Blaney's remarks. Delegates arriving for the convention will be met with a protest by owners of houses with defective blocks. They are angry that numbers who've started remediation have already been informed they are excluded from the 10% increase proposed by Minister Dara O'Brien to cope with construction costs. But we heard yesterday from Minister Charlie McConnell Oak on the news that he's hopeful that there will be a retrospective element to that. There's big numbers, of course, expected at this protest this evening. It kicks off around about 4:30. And I'm sure the organisers will be very aware of this. But I have received contact, and it's difficult for those in emergency services to speak out for fear of sounding like they're not supporting those with defective concrete. And they are, because many of them actually have it themselves. But I do know there is a great concern amongst particularly the ambulance service about access into Letterkenny, and particularly also, not particularly, but equally access out of Letterkenny at the time of that protest. So I have no doubt that those organising it will take that on board, or have taken that on board, and will have plans in place beyond the negotiation with An Gada Síochána Síochána, because that engagement with An Gada Síochána Síochána does not necessarily cover what the ambulance service might do in case of emergency. And I do know there's a great deal of anxiety amongst members there who've been in contact with me, but of course are a little bit uncomfortable probably speaking publicly because they don't want to come across as if they're anti-defective concrete, which of course they would not be, the campaigners, that is, not the actual products. But anyway, there might be more on that a little later on in the programme. The Derry People Donegal News this morning, a woman who was sexually assaulted by a Donegal taxi driver after a night out in Letterkenny when she was 18 years old is calling for reform after waiting 7 years for justice. Paul Bryan, 63, of the bungalow Newtown Cunningham, admitted two charges of sexual assault on October 22nd, 2017. He was jailed on Monday of this week at Derry Crown Court after years of being silenced. The sexual assault survivor spoke to the Donegal News this week about how the attack has changed her life forever. The Derry News this morning, their headline, I've been quiet for 7 years and now for the rest of my life I will not be quiet. A Derry survivor of sexual assault has spoken about the need to change the treatment of the victims and the manner in which it is investigated. A Derry woman, Chloe, finally received her justice 7 years after the night she was the victim of sexual assault. That's reference to the same case there. So she's speaking to both papers, or maybe they're under the same umbrella. I'm not quite sure of the makeup there. But anyway, you can read her views in either of those. On to the Farmers' Journal this morning, and over 8,600 farmers in Acres are in limbo, waiting for balancing payments to be provided by the Department of Agriculture. A further 6,975 farmers have been issued with demands to repay upwards of 12 million due in overpayments of their interim payment. Department officials have said mapping discrepancies, scorecard issues, scheme contract changes and outstanding BIS queries are to blame for the delays to the balancing payments to the scheme. Sounds like an omni-shambles. Right, on to the national newspapers now. And the Irish Independent reports that asylum seekers will have to make a financial contribution towards the cost of their accommodation and other services provided by the state under plans being considered by the government. Government leaders are expected to consider significant changes to the international protection system in the coming weeks that would require asylum seekers to make contributions based on their circumstances. Taoiseach Simon Harris is anxious to introduce reforms, especially in situations where asylum seekers are working and living in state-provided accommodation for longer than 6 months. And separately, but I suppose some might see in the same space. I've been contacted or tagged in posts quite a lot lately as it relates to SUSI grants and the various rates of SUSI grant which are available to people who are living here, Irish people in inverted commas, you know what I mean by that, of course, rather than people that have moved to the country more recently and may count themselves as Irish. It's hard to know the best way to distinguish without offending anyone. But Ukrainian students, for an example, seem to be getting more support through SUSI grants than Irish students born here. So that's something we're looking into and not ignoring. If it's something you've a view on or you have researched or have information, feel free to contact us on 086 60 25000. It's not anti-anything. It's about everyone being treated equally. And I've sat in this chair for years speaking to parents who've struggled greatly or just missed out on the SUSI grant, or the SUSI grant doesn't cover this, that or the other. And it seems that if you have come here more recently, there might be a more favourable SUSI grant. And it's something that we're looking into. As I mentioned, the Irish Times this morning, Apple warned the government of aggressive competition from other countries trying to lure multinationals away from Ireland during a high-level meeting this summer. The tech giant flagged what was described in government notes of the discussion as a very real threat to Ireland. So this is the, you know, the companies that pay quite a lot of corporation tax here that we're told not to rely on. It's not impossible that they could move to another country because other countries are trying to get their money. Apple raised concerns about infrastructure issues in Cork, where its European headquarters is located, saying these were hindering growth plans. It also raised delays securing work visas for staff. The meeting between Apple's Vice President of European Operations, Cathy Kearney, and Minister for Enterprise, Peter Burke, took place in June as the final outcome of the long-running Apple tax case saga was awaited. It wasn't discussed at that meeting, but they did discuss the issues I've just outlined in that article. Here's a good one for you. Obviously, there is an ongoing debate about restricted capacity at Dublin Airport. The permission was granted for a second runway, which is, yeah, happy days, bring in the planes. But a cap was put on the amount of people that could travel through the airport as a result, and they're at that cap or exceeding that cap now. So what do you do in that situation? Well, Junior Transport Minister James Lawless has been criticised for encouraging tourists who want to visit Dublin to fly in via Cork or Shannon instead. It would be handier to fly into Knock as well. The suggestion, labelled as a cop-out, has come amid an ongoing row over the passenger cap at Dublin Airport. And as Ryanair said, that exorbitant prices this Christmas will mean passengers from the UK will be forced to get the ferry home. That's from Britain, of course. After a meeting with Ryanair Chief Executive Michael O'Leary yesterday, Mr. Lawless said, "I've gone to Paris with Ryanair, Venice with Ryanair. Why can't I fly to Dublin, Shannon with Ryanair?" Shannon Airport is around 230 kilometres away from Dublin City, or at least 2.5 hours, depending on the method of travel, while Cork Airport is 260 kilometres away, or at least 3 hours. So that's what Junior Transport Minister James Lawless thinks. I don't know what... I don't know what the Green Party might think, because there's going to be quite a lot of extra emissions, you'd imagine, but there you go. Right, talking about the cost of going back to college, university, and the pressures and prices facing students, the Irish Daily Star this morning has an article that reads as follows. The student rental crisis is now so bad that some students are being told to pay €400 a week to share a bed. Now, I posted a story off the back of an interview we did on this programme last year about students being told they'd have to share beds. They were renting out half a bed. It went absolutely viral on Twitter, on X. It was Twitter at that time. You wouldn't believe the level of abuse I got, right? It was absolutely unbelievable. Then it went on to Reddit as well, and there was loads and loads. And people said it was not true, that it couldn't happen, that it was a lie, that it was false, that it was terrible. And now here we are a year later, after all that nonsense I had to put up with. Here we are now, and it's another story in a newspaper. Student welfare officers have also revealed how some landlords lock kitchens at 6 p.m. or 8 p.m. and front doors from 10 p.m. if students are not indoors. Some student unions yesterday claimed that landlords are not only offering shared rooms to rent, but also shared beds. Others warned that the soaring cost of living and rents means one in five students skip meals to save money. University College Cork welfare officer Larissa Luna Snee said students sharing rooms is still fairly common. We've now heard from other colleges that people are advertising shared beds. It's just funny to read that late on. It's not funny because it's horrible. It's not funny, ha-ha, because it's a horrible situation. Also, too, I was contacted by one or two people recently about the rent-a-room situation, whereby my understanding is it's 7 days a week. You know, not everyone wants to travel home every weekend, but landlords, landladies, I think that landlords covers both genders, doesn't it, were effectively saying, yeah, you can have this room, but it's only Monday to Friday, which I didn't think was legal, to be honest with you. But anyway, there you have it. I wonder, is that something you've experienced? Any stories or help or information you want to get out on that matter, please get in touch with us and we'll get it out to the wider public. The Mirror reports that the government has welcomed the news that the British state intends to hold a public inquiry into the murder of solicitor Pat Finucane. His widow, Geraldine, and the couple's three children have been campaigning for decades for a public inquiry to establish the extent of state involvement. Mr. Finucane's son, John, a Sinn Féin MP, said, "Today is for my father, Pat Finucane." If you're interested in that bike shed, you'll get more details in the not-too-distant future. This is in The Sun. A probe of the €335 spent, €335,000 spent on the Dáil bike shed is due to be completed in the coming days. Last week it emerged the Office of Public Works had spent hundreds of thousands of euro on a bike shed for Leinster House. Companies come out and said, we could do that for you for 25. The OPW defended the spend, claiming high quality materials and finish were required to be in character with the historic setting, which I think is a little bit of nonsense. But anyway, we'll find out what went wrong and how it went wrong in the not too distant future. Probably three or four people will be held accountable. Lol. Of course they won't. It'll just go away. Right, it is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. As I say, we've got a bumper show for you, so stay right where you are. We'll be back after the break. We're joined on the programme by Cassie Lamb, Donegal Regional Officer for the Irish Second Level Student Union. Good morning, Cassie.
Morning, Greg. How are we?
Good to have you back on the show, Cassie. All good. Right, okay, you recently released a report called The Forgotten County, which concentrated on active transportation in rural areas. So talk to me a little bit about the background to this report and how you put it together.
So when I began my activism journey about 2 years ago with the ISSU, transportation has been a key thing for me, especially when I came out to Highland. I think it's the topic I have always talked about. I always then, when I sat in the current council meetings and I talked about it, I think I got the inspiration then to go forth with the report. And The Forgotten County came to mind, and I thought the title would sit it perfectly. From the housing crisis to MICA to transportation, from everything else in between, I thought that title suited it extremely well.
I think it's interesting too to get the views of younger people. It is their country for the future, for an example. So what did younger people tell you? Sort of what were the questions that you asked, and what was the feedback?
Well, last March, I released a survey because without the students of Donegal who put in their input, this report would not be where it is. So say 54.1% of the students who came in and did the survey said that they have been affected by the lack of transportation we have here in Donegal. And a whopping 93.2% of students did say that we would be benefit, like it would benefit us to have trains in Donegal. But what shocked all of us the most out of all of the records we have was that 42.4 students said that their college choice has been affected. And that's what something we really wanted to hear from students. Mm-hmm. Even though it had not been 50 or 60%, it was 42.4% of those students whose third level education has been affected, that their choice of where they want to go and to be get their further education has been affected by.
Yeah, we'll come back to that in a second, because even sort of the 54.1% of Donegal students believe they have been affected by the lack of sustainable, reliable and affordable transportation in Donegal. That doesn't tell the full story either, because, you know, for some, their needs are being met by their parents and guardians. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Who are running them all over the place what have you. So they have not had to consider the fact, perhaps many of them, that they maybe couldn't do it independently, whereas perhaps the rest of the percentage, what is it, 46 odd, they're probably more rural areas, maybe mum and dad doesn't have a car and it's a more acute issue for them. So I think there's probably even a bigger swing in that figure if everything was taken into account.
Oh, 100%, because I am even starting to save. I'm 15 and I'm starting to save for a car, let alone talking about the insurance to pay for the test, for the lessons and the waiting list and everything else in between. It's going to cost an absolute fortune. And if we did have trains in Donegal and if we had sustainable transportation, this would not be the case. It might be a little bit less stress on me. For other students who want to go to the likes of Galway, that they won't feel as pressured to maybe get a car, to put so much money in towards something that we could easily have in Donegal.
Yeah, because I think younger people too are less swayed by, you know, the climate change conspiracy or whatever people want to phrase it. You know, I think if you talk to young people in school, and some would say, yeah, that's because they're being brainwashed in school. But anyway, be what it may, I think everyone's quite well able to think for themselves. Younger people are far more likely to want to take options that are more beneficial to the environment.
Yeah, 100%. And we've really noticed that over the couple of years, especially. And say Ireland, we're not going to hit the 2030 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which really caught my eye. It caught other youth activists, but also just young people, that we're not going to meet those goals. And young people are beginning to realise that it's going to be our planet that we're going to grow up in, to live in, that we're going to be working in. And maybe the next generation, they won't have a planet to do that.
Yeah, and a lot of big boys and girls find that quite scary to hear a young person saying that. We've seen that in backlash from other people that have been quite vocal. So let's get back to the influence or implications for third level. So talk to me a little bit about an example. Give me an example of how that is. It that someone's too far away from bus connections to get them to Galway, or what does it mean when someone says that the lack of transport's affecting their third level options?
So really, my sister, she just went to Galway there to do math teaching, and she has to get a bus. She has her car, she has a license, but for the first while, she's going to be going on a bus. The bus is a good five and a half hour bus drive, which is not being sustainably friendly. It's going to be a very uncomfortable ride all the way down and back up then on Sunday. But as well, if we did have the likes of trains or anything like that, much more sustainable transport, it'd be a more comfortable journey. So then students could actually get a bit more work done on trains and the others. Because say from Letterkenny to Derry, it's an hour and 25 minutes to get there on a bus, and that's all the stops and everything else in between. When if there was a train, it'd be much faster, sustainable. There's not that much negatives compared to the positive side.
Yeah, and then there's going to be younger people too that choose not to go to third level, even to pursue their dreams, because maybe some of these satellite colleges can be in very remote places, or the bus links simply aren't there. And then you throw that on top of expensive accommodation and being asked to pay 400 quid in the rare case to share a bed. You know, we need to be encouraging people and making it as easy as possible for them, and particularly their families, to pursue their educational goals.
100%. Like, as you said, the accommodation, to pay a lump sum of money within a short period of time is such a hard thing to do, especially if it's coming from a student's back pocket. But it's also, trains are not just going to benefit the likes of students. It's going to benefit all the residents of Donegal. It's going to benefit all the residents of the Northwest and even the residents of Ireland, that more people will come to the Northwest, more people would come and visit by the Wild Atlantic Way. It would all be positives. I don't see any negatives during this time.
Yeah, and there's no harm in this if you did, but were you sort of, did you ask the question about trains, or is that what was offered as the best alternative by those that took part in the survey?
Well, I always kind of noticed myself, and especially when I was part of the West Ulster Rails Initiative, that we always saw trains as the best options, because trains are going to be more of the future of transportation here in Ireland, in the world even. And as well, that Donegal has the rails there between Letterkenny and Derry. The railways are there. We just need trains on them that they need to be maintained. It's the same in Clare Morris down in about Mayo Galway region, that there's a rail there and it's being maintained and a train will be put on it. But it should not take to 2050 for a train to be put between Letterkenny and Derry.
All right, brilliant stuff. And I think the findings of this report are available as well, aren't they? I know we got them in a link. Where can people who are interested have a look at it?
So you can go and check it out on issu.ie on the website, or issu4u on all social media platforms.
All right, thanks, Cassie. See you soon. Cassie Lamb there, Donegal Regional Officer for the Irish Second Level Students Union. just as it's been one of those weeks, because quite a bit has come to a head or come to the fore in terms of conversations about defective concrete blocks, and also at relatively short notice, a protest has been planned for this evening. It's to coincide with the Fianna Fáil General Election Selection Convention in the Clanree in Letterkenny. Hi, Greg. On the protest, people complaining about a few hours disruption. We've had 10 years of disruption, 24 hours a day. Emergency services hopefully will not be affected. Why, if anyone knows, has the government not exempted defective homeowners from VAT? My house is being demolished as I write this on a rebuild of 300k. VAT is 38k. That would help big time. That's the kind of clawback I've talked about in this scheme. It's not all just coming out of the taxpayers' pocket, in inverted commas. There is lots of areas where there is clawback on all the materials as well. And then wages and what have you. Why has there not been accountability for this scandal? There are companies who caused this who are still operating. It's the question the people of Donegal want to know. Well, some of the answers are out there, and we've discussed it on this programme in the past. Hi, Greg. It's a disgrace that we have to protest that the government are discriminating against us. Anyone whom had to progress in the scheme as the house is falling around them. I myself have been approved and haven't commenced as trying to gather the money for the gap on the scheme. And even I won't be included, even though I haven't even started at the current rates. I'm doubling my mortgage, which is life-changing for me and my children. How can this happen? It's so unfair and unjust. And I can only talk to Minister Charlie McConnell's comments that he made on the news on Highland Radio yesterday, in which he suggested that he's optimistic there would be a, I don't want to misquote him, but he was optimistic there would be a retrospective element to it. Last one before a break, Greg, in relation to the defective concrete block issue, there's no chance that Donegal will ever be allocated the adequate funding to repair the number of houses affected. To avail of the current scheme, you need to have access to thousands of euros. Most people do not have access to thousands, and the designers of the current scheme understand this fact, and this is by design to allow the allocated funds to be throttled. The European Union will eventually allocate funding to remediate those affected, but in accordance with the principles set out in Agenda 2030, which Ireland signed up to in the 1990s and which the Council will be required to adhere to. I'm not familiar with that agenda. This solution will consist of the centralisation of all residential accommodation to a residential zone with all amenities accessible within that designated area, which will be designated as a smart solution, hence a smart tower block. Right, OK, as I say, I wouldn't fully subscribe to that. And I also doubt there is the competence to put such a plan in place. Right, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. I just want to give you one reminder of Irish Music Month. You have not too long now before you can vote or to vote on our four finalists who are looking for your votes to go on and represent Highland Radio in a major national competition. Owen Ferry is 18 years and he's a singer-songwriter from Gweedor, and this is his track Miss You, which has proved very popular. We also have indie rock band The Aphades. They are Cahir, Grace M, Grace N and Kyle, and this is their track Giving Out. You can go onto our website, highlandradio.com, click on Irish Music Month and vote for them if you wish. Also really popular on the public vote, Zoe McCauley, 16 years of age, from Dunloe. She writes her own songs and sings them as well. And this is, a very popular track of hers. Wait and see. If you want Zoe to be in with a chance, vote for her.
'Cause we're just people floating along, and I'm a person with a song.
Yes, all four artists very, very popular, including Jude McCandless and Callum Feeney. Collectively, they're known as Tessio. They're from Derry, a singer-songwriting duo. And this is their track, Hanging On My Back. So already four acts, they've beaten off over 70 other acts to be our finalists, and they performed for us last Friday. You can see those performances and vote for them on our website. Just click Irish Music Month. One of them will go forward as one of 21 entrants in the national competition. And then six are chosen for a grand finale. We really want one of those four in that grand finale. They've already won close on €900 each and could go on to win much, much more. And they're also going to enjoy more support and more airplay across the country already, which is fantastic. So that's Irish Music Month. It's Irish Radio supporting Irish artists in association with IBI, Hot Press and Commission the Man Sound and Vision Scheme funded by the TV licence fee. So go onto our website, click in Irish Music Month. I think you've got to midnight tonight to have your say. And those votes will be married to a judging panel's votes, with the winner announced tomorrow morning. Now, we got a question in on menopause, and it reads as follows. I've been prescribed the Estrodot patch for 2 years now, but for the last 2 months I can't get it, and the chemists are only giving me the only one they can get their hands on, which is not licensed in Ireland, and it doesn't stick, which then leads to mood swings and just feeling awful. I know three other women personally in the exact same position, and it's just not good enough for menopausal women in Ireland. There are thousands of us and we're not getting the proper medication. Do any of your listeners know any chemists this Estradat patch is available in, and are any in a similar situation, please? Plus, I'm only in my 40s with young children. I don't want to be snappy because of lack of medication available in this country. Also, how can they give out unlicensed medication that is not fit for purpose? Now, we have access to a wonderful pharmacist and guest, Margaret O'Doherty, who's taken our call at short notice. Thank you, Margaret, for helping us answer this listener's query. It's greatly appreciated.
No problem at all, Greg. Always good to talk to you.
Right, so Estradot patches, is there a shortage across the country?
there is. There's a shortage across the country, and it's actually a global shortage of all the medicines that we use for HRT. I'm sure you've discussed it on your show before. I know we've talked about shortages of various medicines, and this particular one, there's been a big upsurge in demand as people have become more aware of the menopause and more aware that there is treatments available for it. So that's basically what's led to the shortage.
Yeah, and of course, too, you know, there was a big campaign for women to look at HRT options. There was a lot of misinformation out there in terms of, you know, certain reactions to certain medicines. And we're getting people, you know, treating themselves, improving their lives, and now here we are, they can't actually get their hands on the medicine that's so important to them.
That's exactly the problem that we're facing at the moment. And I just had a double check on, there's the people who license the medicines are called HPRA, the Health Product HPRA Regulatory Authority, I think. Yeah. It stands for. But basically, they keep a list of all the medicines that they've licensed that are in short supply and so on. You can go onto their website and have a look at it. There's about 300 at any given time. And I had a look. The Estradot has been short since about July, beginning of August. So I don't think there's much hope that this lady's going to be able to get hold of any of it. The alternative that has been brought in what we call an unlicensed basis, we're actually quite fortunate in that the HSE has agreed to pay for it. Usually when this happens, you're left footing the bill yourself. So in this case, they have agreed that while this shortage exists, there will be an alternative brought in, but as your listener has discovered, it's not suitable. It's not working for everybody with this adhesive problem. Mm-hmm. The problem seems to be that the adhesive works fine at normal body temperature, but when your body temperature goes up, it stops sticking. And as anybody that's been through the menopause knows, one of the major problems is you get hot flushes.
The irony of it.
Exactly, yeah. The irony of it. Obviously, whoever designed the adhesive didn't think about this.
Probably
particular one.
It might, yeah.
It might well have been a man, exactly. So that's what's happening, is when somebody suffers a hot flush, or even when, like, this woman's running after small children, you know, her temperature's likely to go up anyway, or if somebody's exercising, going to the gym, going for walks, which is one of the things, obviously, it's recommended for everybody to take exercise, yeah. And it's important at every stage of life. But particularly if you're going through the menopause, it's very important to take exercise and to do what they call weight-bearing exercise for your bones. So all those things are important. So these women are doing everything that they've been told to do. Mm. They're doing it all right, and now their patch is falling off, and they're not getting their estrogen into their system.
Is there any workaround, or has anyone figured out workaround, or is it designed as such that you couldn't, you know, remove the adhesive that's there and find an alternative way to attach it? Or not that that's the solution, but I'm just curious if there's been any workaround.
Yeah, the workarounds that we're working around at the minute is, in some cases, you can use what's called fixing tape. It's basically a large plaster that mm-hmm. you would put over it that would hold it in place. That's one option that might, it's not ideal, but it might work. The other option that there is that the estrogen is also available in a gel.
Mm.
So rather than a patch, you get the gel in a pump, which you apply to the skin.
But people who are finding the Estradot patch working for them, probably then to sort of, you know, go down a different way of absorbing the active ingredients, they might be cautious of that, or maybe for some it might not work as effectively.
That's exactly the problem. And sometimes you also need to adjust the dose. And particularly this lady said that she's in her 40s, mm. so she's quite young. She may be what we call perimenopause, so she's not in full menopause mm. yet. Her body is still producing some oestrogen, and that means it's actually harder to manage than for women who have completely stopped producing it, that they're in what we call full menopause.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tricky to manage at the best of times. You get something that works and you're really happy with it, and then this happens and it's really frustrating. I can, you know, and talking to people in this position pretty well every day, and it's so frustrating that when you finally got what you think is a solution and it's really working well for you, then you're basically back to square one again, trying to start from scratch to find what's going to work for
not
you.
Not good.
And unfortunately, that's just the only option that I can suggest for this lady.
Yeah. Now, the word unlicensed in terms of medicine can sound scary, as if it's experimental or what have you. That doesn't tell the full story. The word, it is proven, I'd imagine, of course, it's proven to be effective if somewhat designed, flawed and safe.
This product has, I mean, it's licensed in other EU countries. There's absolutely no safety issue with it whatsoever. I'd have no concerns on that score. It is just this, I suppose what you'd call a technical issue with the adhesive. There's no problem whatsoever with the drug in it. But it's the actual part of getting it to stick so that you're getting the drug across the skin. It's sounds as if it should be quite easy to deliver a medicine across your skin as opposed to taking it by mouth, but it's actually trickier, and from a technical point of view it's quite difficult.
And so just finally, Margaret, in terms of Estradot availability, does the portal give any indication, but your experience would give us the best indication, when you start seeing a global slowdown in supply, and then you could get into the whole conversation of then who secures whatever stock becomes available. Is it the big buyers like Germany or an outside a European country or what have you? It's complicated, but does it give you any indication as to when new supplies might come our way?
On the website I checked it this morning, now they don't have an updated when it's to be available, but when I was speaking to the rep for this particular product last week, he thought it might be the new year, but It's very fluid with these things as to when the stock becomes available and then when it goes into the supply chain. All I can suggest is that, you know, this woman keeps in contact with her pharmacist. They'll let her know whenever it becomes available again. But it certainly I wouldn't expect it before the new year.
I'm very regrettable, but listen,
I can't offer any more consolation than that.
No, but what you have offered is as much clarity as we can, which actually is something sometimes people can work with, Margaret. It's not a solution, but it's the facts, and that's really helpful. Thank you so very much indeed, as always. Margaret O'Doherty there, a pharmacist and writer, responding to that question from our listener. If that's affecting you, or if you've got something to say on that, you know the numbers. Get in touch with us. Back in studio with me is James Devenny, Letterkenny CDP. They're hosting a Recovery Addiction Day. The event is taking place from 1 to 3pm in Dr. McGlinchey Town Park. I don't actually have the day. When is that? Sorry, James.
It's on Saturday.
On Saturday, okay. Right, so this happened last year as well too, and you had a really good turnout, actually.
I did. We had a good turnout. We had about 80, 90, coming up on 95, maybe just under 100 people there. It went on for 2 hours, the same format. A lot of people just, you know, out making connections, having a talk with other people in recovery, having a talk with other family members in recovery, listening to the music, having a crack over a cup of coffee, doing a few laps of the park as a walk. Then you'd see people heading off for a wee walk by themselves, just to have a wee chat on their own. We also had a very quite moving a memorial service too for the people who maybe didn't make it, the people who lost their lives to addiction, where we played a piece of music, Amazing Grace actually, and people went up and tied a white ribbon onto a tree with their loved one's first name.
I think that's
on
really important, because rightly so, you know, a lot of our interviews and conversations are about, you know, maybe reaching someone with an addiction and maybe helping to signpost them to a pathway to recovery, or supporting, you know, the families of those with related to some with an addiction. But sadly, addiction takes lives. And I think it's wonderful to be able to have a space that people can come out and in public, you know, remember that person.
Yeah.
You know, who was taken by the addiction.
Yeah. For every person that's lost to addiction, you know, there's brothers, there's sisters, there's mothers, there's fathers, there's children left behind. And it gives them a bit of hope too. It gives them a bit of hope where they can meet with other people who've been who have a bereavement through addiction as well.
I would never judge someone who had an addiction. In fact, I would say, well, fair play. You know, you've come through at the other side. Is there still a bit of work to do to break down the stigma around it? And I wonder, do events like this allow people to step out from the shade, maybe?
And
sort of be proud of what they've achieved?
There still would be some stigma there. Like, even like if I even mentioned to people myself, like I've come through addiction, they would sometimes, you know, they don't know how to follow up the next line of the conversation with you. You know, there's still that bit of stigma. There's still that bit of uncomfortableness out there. But events like Saturday always chips away at that stigma. Chips away at that shame.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't get the same shame maybe around, say, diabetes. You wouldn't get the same shame around other health conditions, which addiction, like it is a health condition.
Yeah. Well, it is a condition, as you quite rightly pointed out, and the same as obesity in a way too. There's still a stigma surrounding that disease, as if the person themselves is solely responsible. Your addiction, you've spoken about it before, and I know you're comfortable about talking about it. Just give us a brief synopsis of it, if you don't mind, James. And this is a strange question because it's such an such a big part of your own little life, and I'm asking for a snapshot, right?
Yeah. In a snapshot, I would have started drinking at 17, 18. Prior to that, I would have been very uncomfortable within myself, very shy, very backward. I would have come from a good home. My national school would have been very questionable with the Christian Brothers. I'll not go too much into that.
I think we can
read from it. It wouldn't have given me the best start in life, put it that way. Yeah. It knocked my confidence and it stopped my belief in myself. It made me believe that I wouldn't be listened to. But when I got alcohol at 17, all that left me.
Yeah.
All that left me. My shoulders came out 6 foot. I went into a pub in the town, a quivering wreck. How am I going to get through this? I had a bit of a stutter when I was younger, and I came out of that pub 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
I was looking at my reflection in the mirror, and I was okay with it. I was okay with James. And for the next, 17 years, I just went straight in. I loved the effect. I didn't drink for the party life. I didn't take anything for the party.
Medicating.
I was medicating.
Yeah.
I was medicating my own.
That's what you were doing.
My own. Yeah. Confidence. I was medicating, or not my confidence. I was medicating my lack of confidence. I was
your experiences.
Yeah, it blocked out things. It took things away, and it was a magic potion. But with that come all the trouble. With that come, like, it took me to court. It took me to hospitals. You know, where a lot of normal people would say have a good night out and end up in a party at 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, I would go for a couple of pints and I could end up in a psychiatric unit.
Yeah.
You know, that's not normal drinking.
Yeah. And it affects everyone around you as well, and it affects your relationships, and it affects your finances. And
It crept into every area of my life, Greg.
Yeah.
There was no area of my life and my family. But when I was in it, all I could see was my life. I couldn't see how it was affecting my daughter, how it was affecting my mother, my brother, my sister.
I wish we had more time, but we don't. But was part of your recovery, did you have to treat the causes? So did you have to go back to James in national school, or you know, or back to James with the stutter, or back to James with the confident issue? Because if you take drink out, that's still there. So at that point, as part of your recovery, presumably you had to deal as best you could with the triggers.
Yes. I had periods where I had no drink or had nothing, and I was actually worse.
Yeah.
And I had, 6-7 months away from drink, and I had nothing to medicate all that with.
Yeah,
but when I went, I would have went into White Oaks, and that was the start of maybe looking back.
They looked at stuff, exactly.
And then through other things as well, through counselling, through AA, through different things, I was able to go back and actually start to make friends with that young fella, appreciate him, starting to love myself again.
Accepting him.
Accepting myself and starting to build up a relationship with myself, because alcohol took away all that.
And how long is it since you stopped boozing?
19 years now. 19 years passed.
19 tough years? 19 mix of tough years? Or
A mix. There's some things, sometimes it's hard, but the first couple of years, wasn't easy. But there was a lot of help out there. You know, I had my aftercare, I had AA, I had NA, I had good friends.
Yeah. But if you're in a good, the best space you can be, are you okay with that drink, or are you still drawn to having a drink, if you know what I mean? Because some people, they drink because they love drink, but if they can deal with maybe what they were drinking for, they can get through life with not always having that need for a drink.
Yeah. I can never say I'm cured.
Yeah.
And that's just my own personal thing on it. Other people have different things on it, but my own personal
subjective
thing
is,
yes, I would need to watch just how I am, and I need to keep working on that, because if I don't and I start to let the, we'll call it the SH1T build up, you know, I'll start to look for an escape.
But it's that awareness, though, which is useful, isn't it? Because you're aware of that, I get you.
I look for an escape always.
Yeah. And as I say, everyone's story is different, but the commonality is that the curse of addiction, be it gambling, drugs, alcohol, whatever it might be. In your case, sorry, just to be absolutely clear, it was alcohol. So maybe you've never engaged with other people or you know, fronted it as you know, as part of your recovery. Why not get along to Dr. McGlinchey Park between 1 and 3 p.m. on Saturday? There's live music, games, light refreshment, mocktails. And also, and for some people, that's not going to be for them either.
No.
You know, but this is for the people. No. This is for the people that that works for. But also, too, if you've lost someone to addiction.
Yeah, we will be having that memorial service again. There will be people there on the day, too, that if you want to have a talk, it could be about a family member, it could be about themselves. There will be people there on the day to have a talk. There'll be signposting there as well on the day.
But it sounds like it's positive and informal.
Oh, it's a day of hope. It's a day about celebrating recovery rather than what some people would see being off drink, being off drugs as an endurance.
Right. Okay. James, it's always great to speak to you. I really enjoy you coming up to us. Are 0 pints good to get off drinking? That's subjective. I think in most cases, the pub environment, the taste of the booze, I can't imagine that would be very useful, certainly for someone early in recovery. I don't know what your view is.
My own view, and like, I work on addiction and I certainly wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah,
that, exactly. And that's just...
It'd be like having a gambling addiction and then trying to...
Mind gamble.
Or gamble with tokens or something. It's just... I can't see how that would be useful.
In my experience, it always leads... I've seen back. A lot of people I worked with, and that was the start of their relapse back into alcohol again.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. All right, it's Letterkenny CDP Recovery Walk. It's positive, it's casual, it's reflective, it's going to be emotional for those who've lost people to addiction, but it's going to be very welcoming with signposting, some advice, and integration with other people. Live music, games, light refreshments between 1 and 3 p.m. at Letterkenny Town Park, that is Bernard McGlinchey Town Park. James will be there. And James, I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Grace.
Is there anything you just want to mention? We have numbers and stuff here too.
There's numbers and stuff there for our own services as well, if any of the listeners want to follow.
I'll recap that after 10. Is that all right?
No problem, Grace.
Okay,
no problem.
Thanks very much indeed, James. Back after the news.